Tommy waits for the 3-2. Here it is. A swing and a high fly ball left center field. He's going to join the 500 club. Eyes on the run. He's at the track. He's at the fence. Leaps. Makes the catch.
Yes.
He took away a home run. Wow. What a play. Ramirez has it. Throws. Brody picks a perfect game. People going crazy here at U.S. Cellular. He's mobbed by his teammates. A perfecto.
White Sox. White Sox.
White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. The latest news and views from players, coaches, and direct from the front office. White Sox Weekly on the proud new home for Chicago White Sox baseball. WLS AM 890.
Welcome in to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. Thanks so much for joining us. We have a really great show for you this afternoon as we are, my God, days away from pitchers and catchers reporting. It's the middle of February, and still we've got storylines here in the major leagues and good ones, too. The White Sox making some news for us, and I feel like they do this just for us here on White Sox Weekly. They give us a little bit of news each week to kind of deal with and talk about and get excited about, really, this time around. Matt Latos and Travis Ishikawa both signed. Latos, a really nice round-out piece, not without some questions, but not without some upside either. And a really good piece to kind of round out the White Sox rotation. And there could be more. There could be a lot more. We've got plenty on the show, and we'll get to a lot of that throughout the day. But we've got a lot to do on the show. And this is kind of this is the fun part. This is the live radio part that we get to tell you about and do a little producing over the air. We are going to talk to White Sox assistant general manager and director of player personnel, Buddy Bell, in just a couple of minutes. In fact, it's going to be so quick because Buddy's on the West Coast taking a look at a couple of baseball games. So in just a couple, we're going to hit a commercial break real quick, and then when we come back, we'll have a nice long chat with Buddy Bell. On the other side of the 12:30 news, White Sox pitching coach Don Cooper is going to make his season debut here on White Sox Weekly. We'll have plenty of things to talk about pitching-wise with him, with the addition of Matt Latos. And with Buddy, too, we'll probably address a couple of things. I'm sure you saw Baseball America were the latest kind of outfit to come out with their top 100 prospect list, and both Carson Fulmer and Tim Anderson made their debuts on that list, or I shouldn't say debuts, but their appearances on that list, Tim Anderson being ranked 45th and Carson Fulmer being ranked 70th. Corey Seager of the Dodgers was the number one prospect in baseball, according to Baseball America. So we've got plenty to get to. I want to say this about the Matt Latos deal. And of course, we'll have time for your phone calls as well, probably a little bit after the Don Cooper interview, just after 12:40, something like that. We'll set aside some time for everyone. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. You can also text us. 68683 is the text number, and please do include WLSAM in your message. You can also tweet at us, and I promise you, you tweet at us, we're going to get everything on the air here. You can tweet at me at C1, the number, C1 McKnight is the Twitter handle there. You can get at us, ask a couple of questions about the Matt Latos signing, rounding out the rotation, all that good stuff. We're going to get to Buddy Bell in very quickly here, just because that's his schedule, and my God, when Buddy's got a schedule, we're going to keep to it. But I really like the Matt Latos signing for a number of different reasons. I think, you know, you can look at some peripherals and you can look at some of the I don't know, outside numbers, the kind of the little nitpicky kind of things where velocity's up and return is there. Look, it's never a good thing, usually not a good thing, when a player spends a season with three different organizations. However, with Latos, I think at age 28 and with some of the rebound that he showed in different parts of his game, I think it's a phenomenal chance for him to come to Chicago, get fixed by a White Sox team that is known for fixing pitching, and maybe round out this rotation, put a little competition into things. A real nice signing. We'll get to that on the other side, too. Going to step to a break real quickly here. Buddy Bell, White Sox assistant general manager, going to join us just after a quick break. He's on the West Coast taking a look at some baseball games. We'll talk some baseball with him. Coming up next on White Sox Weekly, right here on WLS AM 890.
White Sox baseball. Experience it here. WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We are listening to the new home for your Chicago White Sox. We have the pleasure of talking to White Sox assistant general manager and player development director Buddy Bell this afternoon. Hey, Buddy, how you doing?
I'm great. How you guys doing?
Oh, fantastic. Excited for a season of White Sox baseball. You guys did us a nice little favor on the broadcasting side of picking up two interesting players this past week in Matt Latos and Travis Ishikawa. We'll talk about those guys a little bit and the minor league system, too. But I was reading through, buddy, and don't think you're going to get away without, you know, some plaudits coming your way. You were the 2015 recipient of the Sheldon Bender Award. It's Minor League Baseball's Distinguished Service for Player Development. Congratulations, my friend. Well done.
Well, thanks, first of all. There's a lot of really, obviously a lot of really good people out there that are involved in player development, scouting, and things like that. And I think what happens is it's a longevity thing. The longer you stay around, I think they feel like they have to give you some award. But this is a little bit different for me because my first gig in player development, in terms of administratively anyway, was with the Cincinnati Reds, and Chief was actually my mentor as far as farm directors and how to handle affiliates and things like that. So the award means probably a little bit more to me than maybe somebody else, just because I had worked with Chief and thought the world of him. And of course, when I played for the Reds, he was the farm director there. So I've known him for a long time, and you know, we all miss him. But there's a lot of people out there that really have benefited from being around him. So it's a nice award. I appreciate you bringing it up.
Oh, absolutely. And again, congratulations on it. I know everybody at the White Sox is proud of you for earning it. I wonder, buddy, you know, because a lot of guys who are in your position right now came up as, you know, players in the league. A lot of guys had a little bit of major league experience. Many guys had a good amount of minor league experience too. I wonder, you know, in your transition from, you know, from eventually, you know, player to front office kind of work and scouting and player development, what kind of lessons you learned about, you know, the way you played the game versus how you need to look at the game and evaluate it for the team you're working for? I'm sure Chief taught you a couple things about that as well.
Yeah, you know what, the most important thing, first of all, when I was fortunate to play 18 years in the big league, so when, you know, there's some good and bad there, you know, the good part is you were able to play that long, the bad is you tend to think you know everything about everything, you know, when it comes to baseball, and I found out really quickly that I didn't really know a whole lot. You know, I knew how to play, but I didn't really know the mechanics of the game all that well. As most players don't, they just play the game. So I found out very quickly when I started my career as a part-time instructor with the Indians, and found out early on that I was like really didn't know quite sure how to explain the mechanics, how to coach really. I was really fortunate to be around some really great people at Cleveland, with in particular Johnny Goro, who really taught me a lot about, you know, just how to coach, how to explain things, and more importantly, how to be patient. Because when you play that long, you know, and you see a game that's not being played all that well by younger guys, you sort of can get frustrated. And I was a little frustrated at first that the guys weren't able to play as well as I thought they should. But looking back on my career and when I started, I certainly made a lot of mistakes and really played the same way they play in an early level. So the patience and just sitting back and picking out things kids need to work on rather than, you know, breaking them down and being so negative, I think that's helped me along the way. And the plan has helped me a great deal, but more than anything, just sitting back and listening to these great instructors has really helped me more than even that.
Well, I think that's, you know, you mentioned patience, and I think that's a really interesting word that kind of gets, you know, that can play on both sides, you know, for you guys in the game and in organizations, and then it can also play for fans a little bit too. You know, we're in a community, a baseball community now that is so focused on, you know, the 22-year-old or 21-year-old or, my God, 20-year-old that comes up and, you know, dominates Major League Baseball for 4 or 5 months. And prospect hysteria, I think, has right. grabbed hold of a certain, you know, segment of baseball fan. And I think, you know, one of the things that, It looks that way. I mean, you look at all the kids. But I think something that fans definitely have to remember, too, is that, you know, we have to be patient. Development isn't a linear thing, you know, and we can go back and, you know, we get to scout stat lines, I guess, but we can't go to, you know, not everybody can finance a trip to Birmingham and round their way through the Carolina League for a couple of weeks. So, you know, being able to know what we're looking at that's not just a slash line when we look at a prospect, I think is a really valuable thing, especially in this kind of climate.
Well, how I look at it, too, is that, you know, when I go to a game, when somebody gets caught up, whether it's with our club, with the White Sox or whoever it is, I'll watch the kids that come up and just kind of pick guys out and say, okay, what do they do well? Because at some point, the game is going to be so fast for them, they're going to hit a little bit of adversity. And really, that's where I think their development comes in, how they've been taught to act, how they've been able to slow the game down, how have they been able to react to slumps, because there's no way that you can simulate the speed of a major league game in the minor leagues. You just can't do it. So that's where the patience comes in. You have to understand that this is the quickest game they've ever been a part of in a major league game, and you're going to have some downs, some series where you just can't play very well, just because first of all, you're never going to be able to play perfect all the time, especially when you're a young player. You're going to have some cases where you just think you're not going to get another hit, or you're not going to be able to get anybody else out. So patience is a key virtue when you're instructing, when you're coaching. It doesn't mean you can't have an edge either. You have to let these kids know that there's expectations when you get to the major leagues. Because nobody cares. The only thing people care about are winning ball games. And you have to do something every single game to help that team win, whether it's a base hit, whether it's a big play, whether it's a great base running play, whether it's being in the right place, saying something to a teammate, whether you picked up something, just watching the game. So there's a lot of things that you can do throughout the course of a game that can help your team win, and that's what it's all about. That's really what developing is all about, because most of the kids, I'm kind of rambling here, I'm sorry, but most of the kids that we sign are talented kids. They can hit, they have good arms. For the most part, they can run a little bit, they got good balance. But a lot of them just can't handle the adversity of it. And we don't know that until they get to the big leagues, quite frankly. I mean, we can guess and say, hey, this guy is going to be all right. But quite frankly, and if people say that they can, they're not telling the truth. It's the only way you're going to be able to tell if a kid can make it or not is what he does in the big leagues. And it's an interesting thing to watch, and player development is great because you're always wishing the best for these kids, because you're hoping that something in player development is clicked for them.
We're talking about White Sox assistant general manager Buddy Bell here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. Buddy's rambling is much preferable to my own here on the show, so don't worry at all about that. No. I mean, listen, White Sox fans just got done listening to me ramble for 10 minutes. They'd much rather listen to you ramble now. Buddy, I got to ask you, I know you're on the player development side, but as assistant GM, you know, you're in these conversations too. White Sox made some news in signing Matt Latos to a one-year deal. It's reportedly worth about $3 million. I'm not going to make you comment on the money side of things, but listen, Matt Latos has a reputation in this game. He was a top-tier starter from 2010 to 2013. It's usually, I mean, let's be frank about it, it's usually not a great thing when you're on three teams in one major league season. However, there are a lot of numbers and a lot of peripherals on Matt Latos that suggest that the success from 10 to 13 is harnessable. And if you had to pick a team, you know, to go work on a reclamation project, and I say that with kindness in my heart, you would pick the White Sox to go fix a pitcher for a lot of different reasons, and we'll talk to Don Cooper a little bit later in the show. But, you know, take me into the decision to sign Matt a little bit here and what the idea was behind picking him over, you know, a couple other guys who are out there in the market to round out the rotation.
Well, first of all, I think it's a great sign. I think it's, you know, as you mentioned, Latos has had some great years in the past. Why he's kind of fell off, I don't know, probably mechanical issues. You know, we've heard some talk about his makeup, you know, some makeup problems in the past. You know, a lot of times that can be sensationalized just because of the media gets a hold of some. Somebody might have said this or that, a player that didn't, you know, might have had a spat amongst themselves, they got a hold of it. And now all of a sudden the guy's a makeup guy. I will tell you this, and you mentioned it too, Connor, that our pitching program has been as good as any pitching program in baseball for the last 20 to 30 years. Mm-hmm. So if you're gonna get fixed, this is a good place to do it. The main reason for the sign, however, is competition. You know, we want as much competition as we can possibly get. I mean, we got Eric Johnson did a really good job in Charlotte last year, came up and performed a lot better than he did the year before. We have some other guys that are in that mix, but when you throw a Latos in there, then you can really make good decisions because you got a guy that has put up big numbers in the past, but you put him up against some of our younger guys that are vying for that spot, and then you can really define who's going to help you and who's not. You know, Latos might not be the guy, but Eric Johnson might show himself just because of the competition. So I think that's the main reason. I think Robin and Coop, and they do a great job with anybody that has a little bit of a makeup problem. But I don't, you know, I have a lot of friends in the Reds organization, and they had a lot of good things to say about Latos, so I'm not real concerned about that.
Talk to White Sox assistant GM Buddy Bell for a couple more minutes. Listen, Buddy, White Sox fans on Twitter and on the texts this afternoon have let me know that if I don't ask you about Tim Anderson, they're going to flay me alive. So I need to ask you about White Sox top prospect Tim Anderson. Well, by a lot of people's rankings, Tim Anderson, the kid has the bat. He's got blazing speed. I found it real interesting, and I'd like you to speak to his overall development and what kind of the plan is for him going forward. But I found it real interesting that, you know, the speed has always been there with Tim. Right. But he worked with Vince Coleman in the minors this last year, and the stolen base numbers, I mean, the sheer counting numbers went up, but the rate went up as well. And I figure when you're looking at a guy like Tim with that kind of speed and you hand him Vince Coleman, you're just, I mean, you're kind of rubbing, you know, $2 together and making a billion out of it. I mean, that's just a great matchup in the minors.
Yeah, and we had another guy in the minor leagues that really did a great job with our base running. And I think the guys that come up to the big leagues, guys like Saladino, Micah Johnson, and Micah had some things base running wise along the way that weren't so great. But you know, Micah really developed into a pretty good base runner in the minor leagues. And as I mentioned before, the major leagues can sort of stunt that growth a little bit just because of the speed you're not used to. But we had a guy in the minor leagues, Doug Sisson, who does a great job with our base runner. So Timmy obviously has great speed. There are a lot of guys that have great speed that don't have good percentages.
Yeah.
And I think the comment, you know, Vince helped him a lot last year. Sisson helped him a lot. You know, one of the things we try to stay away from is the number. You know, okay, we want to steal 100 bases. Well, you know, it's not so great when you're stealing 100 bases when your percentage is 60%. I mean, we don't want to run into outs. And Timmy did a great job last year knowing when to run. He just didn't run haphazardly at any time. He knew the situation, which is something that Sisson really worked with him on. But, you know, defensively, Tim's come a long way. Offensively, you know, we're still trying to get him to control the strike zone a little bit, which we do with all of our young players. You know, there's a fine line, and you know, getting these guys to be aggressive, but actually getting a good pitch to hit. Tim did a much better job at the end of the year last year, but his development in all areas is great. He's a smart, really, really smart kid. He's a tough kid. He's about as edgy and as competitive as any kid we have in our minor league system, which I like. Mm. Yeah, sometimes that gets you in a little bit of trouble. I think he got thrown out of a couple of games or whatever. But,
yeah.
But you know what? I like that. I like that a kid cares. I like that he cares about the team. I care that he cares about the teammates. And TA has all those attributes. And, you know, we just got to be careful. We just don't want to rush him. We want to, you know, he was a basketball player, you know, in high school for the most part. He did some AAU stuff. So he didn't really have a lot of baseball experience before he signed. But so we always want to be careful with him. But he has a real good chance that the people in Chicago are going to be able to see him this year at some point.
So, buddy, as we let you go here, let's take a look toward, you know, that back 10 of the system, perhaps. I mean, I think White Sox fans are very familiar with Tim Anderson and obviously Carson Fulmer at the top of this system. If they're going out to the backfields, if, you know, they're going out to spring training and watching, you know, the 12th inning, God forbid, of a Reds-White Sox game, and it's a bunch of triple-digit numbers on the back of uniforms, who are, you know, down towards the Adam Engel, Micah Rodolfo, Courtney Hawkins, and here's the other, you know, buddy, I got to do this. I have a bone to pick as a broadcaster, and Ed and DJ, I know, are backing me up on this. If Trey Miocheski makes it up to the major leagues in his career, and I hope he does, but we got to change the last name because there's no way we're going to get it right every time. There's just no way.
You got it right. That was really good, though. That is Miocheski is the exact pronunciation.
3 hours of research got me there, buddy. That's what it took.
You know what? To make it more interesting, when you are sitting in a game at Camelback in the 12th inning watching the Reds and the White Sox, think about any minor league player that goes over there is treating this like it's the seventh game of the World Series.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's spring training. These kids want to do well. They want to do well in front of the staff. They want to do well in front of the fans. You know, it's like playing in the backyard, man. It doesn't matter what the stakes are. It's important that you do well. And you know, we have some good kids. You know, guys like Engel, May, Spencer Adams. I don't have a piece of paper in front of me. Danish. There's a lot of good players. We lost a lot of good players trying to build our club.
Sure.
And I think the trades that we made were good ones. But it's always hard to lose your younger players, but you know what? There's a draft. Every year there's a draft, and we replenish. And but it's going to be an exciting year for us. I'm really excited about our major league club. I think we did a lot of really, really good things this year. I thought we did a lot of really good things last year. For a reason, it didn't work out. But I think it's going to be an exciting year. And I'm sure the White Sox fans are gonna enjoy themselves this year.
Buddy, appreciate you sitting with us for a couple of minutes. Looking forward to talking to you again once spring training rolls around.
All right, Connor. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Absolutely. You too. That's White Sox assistant GM Buddy Bell joining us here on White Sox Weekly. Appreciate his time. We'll sit down with him again in spring training. Stay with us here on your new home for White Sox baseball because Sox pitching coach Don Cooper is going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on the new signing of Matt Latos and the rotation as a whole. Keep it right here. Your new home for the White Sox, WLS AM 890.
Big John Howe, Rush, and starting this spring, the Chicago White Sox, WLS, AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. You're on WLS, AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. Just got done having a chat with Buddy Bell, who's on the West Coast and scouting some baseball for the White Sox, and figured we'd turn our attention to the rotation. And a guy who's going to be in Arizona, well, if he's not there already, White Sox pitching coach Don Cooper joins us on White Sox Weekly. Hey, Coop.
Good morning. Good afternoon. How you guys doing?
Fantastic. Could not be better. White Sox making a little bit of news this week, and we've got pitchers and catchers reporting. What is that? Thursday, Friday next week. I mean, it's upon us, Coop. I'm excited.
First day on the field is Friday.
Excellent. So where have you been? How have you been spending the last 2 weeks, knowing that we are, you know, very close to go time for the 2016 season?
Listen, trying to enjoy every minute. that we have left in the off season with my family, tying up loose ends, doing some packing. You know, some Saturday afternoon watching a little bit of LSU versus Texas A&M on the basketball, waiting to talk to you, anxious to talk to you, really, because I enjoy talking to White Sox baseball, White Sox pitching. It's fun. I enjoy it.
Well, let's get to the new guy, your new charge, Matt Latos, who's going to be coming into the White Sox on a one-year contract. We talked a little bit with Buddy Bell about him. And I think, you know, it's an interesting call. And Buddy brought this up almost the first thing he said, first thing out of his mouth was, you know, I think it's a great sign is what Buddy said, because it's about competition. You know, it's about putting those guys in that, you know, back half of the rotation into a spot where they've got something to work for and something to compete for during spring. I wonder if you feel the same way and how you think things round out to start spring training.
Well, competition is always good. And, you know, picking up Latos, this guy's got experience on top of it more than anybody else that he's going to be in competition with. He's got a track record. He's been real good in the National League. Last 2 years, hasn't panned out the way he wanted it to pan out. Looking at video, looking at his stuff is good enough. You know, he's got to command a little better. Looking at numbers, well, you know, for a long time he's gotten righties and lefties. Last year the lefties got him a little bit more. I've had conversations with him on the phone and via text. He's feeling good. We're going to untrack him, you know, starting out in spring training to get him going. It adds depth, you know, it adds depth to the White Sox. And, you know, the more depth you have, the better, because, you know, going through many seasons now with the White Sox, I can't even look back on 05. The bottom line is it takes more than 10, 11, 12 pitchers to win a world championship. And it would hold the same for position players. You need guys, you know, extra guys that when somebody goes down, they can fill in. And not only just fill in well to try to, you know, keep good flow going.
So with Matt's season in 2015, obviously it didn't quite go the way he wanted, and 14, some injuries for Latos too. Do you think that the reputation that you and the White Sox have for, I don't know, straightening guys out, you know, working things over, being a place where you can kind of come back to being you and getting things kind of settled down, do you think that factored at all in his decision to come to the South Side?
I didn't ask him that question. Hopefully it did, you know. And I like challenges like this, to where somebody's not doing as well as they, you know, maybe have been billed. You know, they haven't had the success that they were expected to have, you know. And Matt has had some success in the last couple of years. He has it. And there's different scenarios where a guy maybe hasn't had the success just yet. I look at it as a challenge because I'd like somebody to turn around and say, wow, you know, look what they did with this guy, you know. And so I that's the way I approach it. And then I'll, you know, look at this guy's stuff, look at his delivery, look and see if we'll tweak anything. Do we add a pitch? Do we put one on the back burner? You know, and really, for every single guy that we got, how in the heck are we going to make this guy the best he can be?
Yeah.
And that's the goal.
White Sox pitching coach Don Cooper here joining us on White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890, the new home for the White Sox. Let's talk a little about Carlos. I know last season, you know, walks, when he had poor starts or I guess subpar starts, it was walks. And when he had, you know, the Carlos Rodon stuff that I saw, you know, 3 years ago at NC State and fell in love with when he was still a prospect for everybody, you know, that was that slider, that high K rate, that sort of thing. What's on the checklist for Carlos this spring as he goes from rookie to sophomore season in the bigs?
Dang, a whole lot of thoughts pop into my mind when you bring up Carlos. One, don't forget, this is his first go-round
right
at the major league level. And I don't know of many guys that, you know, their first time in the big leagues, they grab the brass ring the first time around the merry-go-round and they just do great and the rest is history. As a matter of fact, it looks to be the opposite. You know, you look at Nolan Ryan, look at Roger Clemens, look at Randy Johnson. None of them, and they're Hall of Famers, none of them did well right away. And you know, Carlos, you know, for what it's worth, yeah, he was one of the best prospects, obviously, in the United States the year before. That's why we drafted him so high.
Yeah.
But I like to say he's pitching against 5'7 guys that are playing for Appalachian State. He's no longer doing that. You know, he's pitching against the best guys in the world. And
and you've got to be on top of your game against the best guys in the world. And I think he learned on the way. And I think we stumbled onto a couple of things that may have helped him. And the next thought that comes to mind after mentioning all that is we've got to pick up where we left off. You hit it on the head with strikes. I mean, listen, I don't care who you are. You get ahead, you're going to be more dangerous. You get ahead, your pitching life's going to be more successful. And if you've got exceptional stuff, when you get ahead, you can be deadly.
We were talking with, had a chance to sit down with Nate Jones during Sox Fest. And the guy's fun to have a conversation with. He's a funny dude. He's, you know, pretty straight up guy. And he said that in his return from injury last season, the biggest thing that he wanted to prove to everybody in the coaching staff and kind of prove to himself was that he can get out there, you know, back-to-back days, he can be counted on to return, all that kind of stuff. And he was proud that he was able to show that as best he could. I wonder with Nate, you know, if the gloves are off with him, if everything's good to go, if there's any kind of, I wonder if we should throw him back-to-back kind of thing, you know, starting off in spring training and where we're at with him, because he's such a valuable piece in that bullpen getting Robertson at the end.
Well, absolutely he is. You're right with that, Connor. He's got a tremendous arm. We answered all those questions last year. You know, he did come back. He is healthy. He did go back-to-back games somewhere in there, I'm sure he did. We watched him, but we wanted to make sure that we answered all the questions. And nothing would please us more than to take the gloves off, so to speak, as you just mentioned, with everybody. You know, and they're all important. Let's face it. You look at the good bullpen. Kansas City had a great bullpen,
yeah.
And that's one of the main reasons why they won. The Yankees just acquired Chapman. Well, they got Chapman, Betances, and Andrew Miller. You know, so it's kind of a six-inning game. Our bullpen is a little bit different. You know, we have to kind of mix and match and a little bit, as well as we got Robertson in the ninth hole. And I'd love to think that Nate Jones is going to take the seventh or eighth. And, you know, that's kind of answering a lot of questions there. But Nate is a big piece of it, you know, because he can get strikeouts. A lot of our other guys are contact ground ball guys. And there's nothing wrong with that either, you know. Patrico is a ground ball specialist, especially against righties, and we're going to try to shore him up against lefties. But, you know, when you're talking about anybody in the bullpen, it's about taking care of their little piece of the plot. You know, when they're asked to pitch, they get the job done, so they solidify their area and get it closer and closer and eventually get the ball to the closer, because that's kind of the goal.
I remember, Coop, we were talking with Robin during Sox Fest, too, and this conversation just kind of popped into my head. And, you know, I was asking him if there's anybody in the bullpen this year, or anybody kind of in the, maybe they're on the end of the 40-man, or some, you know, somebody who's looking to break camp as a non-roster guy that he thought could maybe, like, you know, perk some ears up or wake some people up. And he said, well, Nate Jones was kind of that guy a couple of years ago. And he was kind of recounting a conversation or what happened in the dugout with you two. You know, I guess you saw Nate throw a little bit and you both sat up a little, you know, kind of saw what he had. Robin said he looked at you and said, yeah, let's get this guy some run. This is really good. I wonder if you can kind of go back to that first spring of seeing Nate throw like that.
Well, there's a lot of situations like that. As you're saying that, I can remember the first time that Jose Quintana, you know, I saw him in spring training.
Sure.
We did a couple of things as an organization with him. And then he came up and pitched against Cleveland. And I remember having a very similar conversation with Robin on that. You know, with Nate, listen, it jumps out at you because it's velocity, stuff, you know. It's a well above average, you know. But I don't care how well above average your stuff is, you still got to throw strikes with that stuff. Or it just doesn't really, you know, amount to much, you know, as much. But we knew we had stuff, which means, you know, a guy throwing a ball 96 and above, there's a certain amount of hitters in every lineup that are going to have major problems catching up with that. But some can, especially if it's not located. When I think of Nate, you know, listen, it's time for Nate Jones to take the next step. And what I mean by that is to solidify himself as one of the top guys because he features some of the top stuff. How do you do that? By throwing more and more strikes, to be specific, more quality strikes. Mm. Nate got burnt a little bit last year, giving up a few too many home runs. And that's going to happen with anybody giving up home runs. But you want to keep it to a minimum. on poorly located fastballs, fastballs that were supposed to be on the hands to a lefty that got down and in. Well, lefties are low ball hitters. You throw the ball down there, they got a chance to drop some bat head on you. So it's more and more refinement of the stuff that Nate has, which was, you know, when Rob and I first saw it, and I saw it even before RV, because I had seen Nate in our system before RV came back, that we knew he had the physical stuff. Now, can you command that physical stuff? And on top of it, you know, what kind of mental that comes into it? You know, can you handle situations? And Nate can. You know, one thing about Nate is he wants the big moments. And, you know, heck, nothing to please us more than give that to him. But now for me, the difference is going to be, you know, the thing that separates everybody is the ability to hit the glove with the stuff you have and to change speeds with a couple, two, three pitches. Now, relievers don't need necessarily three. They're real good with two and a half above average stuff. Hmm. Starters have to have three,
yeah,
you know, and possibly even four in some cases. But, you know, Nate is, you know, again, when I think about everybody you bring up, any name you bring up, I've got something in my mind on each guy. And the thing for Nate, like I mentioned with Carlos Rodon, we've got to pick us up where we left off and ready to make the next step forward. The improvement or the process never ends. It ends when they retire. You're always trying to improve and get better. Heck, if you're not trying to do that, what are you doing?
Good, fair point. Let me ask you this before we go here. I was reading, I don't know if you've seen this, and if you haven't, I'll show it to you when we get to spring training. There's a Fangraphs piece on Mark Burley's career and just how unbelievable he'd been considering what he was using and what he wasn't using and what he did have and what he didn't have. Have you talked to Mark, and do you know whether he's looking at this season and ready to pitch? Have you had conversations with old Burley?
I have had some conversations with him, and he's going to announce what he's got to announce. I'm not 100% sure. I know Mark, though. Mark really gets to like the off season, and really gets to get comfortable with his family.
Mm.
You know, he's got a couple of kids, his wife, his mom, his dad. He owns a lot of property, likes hunting and doing that stuff. Listen, I want what Mark Burley wants. If Mark Burley wants to come back, I'm all for it. If Mark Burley wants to retire, he deserves that too. You know, I don't believe he can make a bad decision, to tell you the truth, and that's what I told him. I don't, you know, he just can't make a bad decision on this. Whatever you want is a good decision. You know, but I do know this. You know, talking about the career he had, well, we were lucky enough to see most of it in Chicago.
Yeah.
And we saw a world championship. We saw a no-hitter. We saw a perfect game. You know, and there's many, many other stories and things that come to mind when I think about Burley. I would say this. I think he's in some way, shape, or form, if he doesn't come back, we've got to try to get him back on board with the White Sox because he is a White Sox.
Oh, no doubt about it. And you know, I hope he comes back and throws another season because I love watching him. But on the other hand, if he does decide that last year was his last one, I don't think it'll be very long before 56 is out there in the ballpark somewhere and, you know, nobody else is wearing it for some time. Coop, appreciate you hopping on. We will we'll talk to you in spring training down there in Arizona. Looking forward to it.
See you soon.
Absolutely. Don Cooper, White Sox pitching coach, joining us here on White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890. I'll get into this. Fangraphs wrote the piece on Burley and exactly what has been an incredible career. I'll point you over to it and shoot the link out to. Got to hit the break real quick. 312-591-8900 is the phone number. Got a couple of minutes for your phone calls just on the other side of a quickie here on WLS AM 890.
Passion, pride, tradition. The White Sox lay here. WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. You got a couple more minutes left with us. Just a couple more days before pitchers and catchers report down in Arizona. You just heard Don Cooper hanging out with us, White Sox pitching coach. First workout on the field is the 19th. That's next Friday is what it is. Next Friday, we finally get to start this thing up and get the 2016 season up and moving around. You can see guys out there as early as that. There have been some early reporters as well. Guys down there in camp getting their hacks in, throwing things around, playing a little golf. That's what spring training is, though. It's a good thing. 312-591-8900 is the phone number. Still got a minute or two if we want to squeeze one in. I know a lot of people have And we talked quite a bit with both Buddy Bell, assistant GM of the White Sox, and Don Cooper, the pitching coach, about Matt Latos and the new signing that happened earlier last week. I believe it was Monday, if I'm not mistaken. Tuesday, perhaps. So Latos then signs for the one-year deal. It's a $3 million deal. And like we brought up with both Buddy and with Coop, last season didn't go exactly the way he wanted. And yet, I'm looking over at the baseball reference page for Latos. Just in case White Sox fans, in case you guys haven't taken a look quite yet, or you're not setting out the rotation in your mind and doodling in your notebooks and doing starting lineups, like you do from 1 to 9, setting a batting order or a pitching rotation, like when you're bored in English class in high school. I did that a lot. From 2010 to 2013, Latos threw 799 innings, made himself 127 starts, kept a 3.27 ERA, an ERA plus of 116. I mean, decent numbers all throughout. And this one's maybe my favorite. It's a WHIP of 1.16. Pretty decent way of, or pretty decent method in keeping base runners off or limited. Now, granted, injury and a couple of adverse situations, some of which he, it's well publicized what he said about teams after he's left them. However, you heard Coop and you heard Buddy Bell both say it. This is a guy whose problems, whose issues, whether it be mechanical or whether it be velocity or whether it be health, can be fixed by this ball club. That's a pretty confident thing for both Buddy and for Coop to say. And I think, they've given you every reason to believe them over the past, I think it was Buddy who said over the past 20 or 30 years, we've proven to have this kind of a track record. Now, Coop hasn't been here that long. But the organization itself has that kind of reputation to it. So I love the signing. I think it's a great move by Rick Hahn in the front office to go ahead and put some competition into the rotation. And I think it'll be really interesting to see how spring training plays out with those guys fighting for the back end. And who knows, maybe Latos is pushing for, top three in that rotation by the end of it. He certainly has a track record to do it. That'll do it for us. Thanks so much for checking us out. Thanks to Buddy Bell, White Sox assistant GM, for joining us. Thank you to Don Cooper, White Sox pitching coach, too, for hanging out. We start broadcasts pretty darn soon. I mean, you're going to want to check it out. March 3rd is our very first spring training broadcast. It's the White Sox and Angels out there in Arizona. Ed and DJ will have it for you right here on WLS. I'll be down there in Phoenix on the 26th and 27th, hanging out for Media Day, getting things set up for you. Can't wait. Looking forward to it. We're excited to have White Sox baseball here and excited to have you joining us for White Sox Weekly as always. I'm Connor McKnight. Keep it here. News is next on WLS AM 890.